You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Welcome along to the Daily Racing Podcast, brought to you by William Hill. We're looking ahead to Friday's racing on this edition. We've got action from Catterick, Ascot and Fosslass in the afternoon, and your usual double helping of all-weather racing on Friday evening from Newcastle and Dundalk. We're live on Racing Radio from 12:10pm with Stephen Powell, Ross Briley and Kevin O'Malley in the studio to guide you through all of the day's meetings. Five of them in total on Friday to get stuck into. We're going to take an early look ahead to some of the action now with Andrew Mount. How are you, Andrew?
I'm good, thanks, Sam. How are you doing?
Not too bad at all. Day three of three for yourself.
Yeah, it is. It's been a marathon stint.
Yeah, I bet. You'll be looking forward to having a lie down in a dark room perhaps after this, or the day's been profitable.
No, they said, we'll keep you on until you tip a winner. So it's been three days now, I'm still waiting.
Anything caught the eye over the last couple of days? It's been usual midweek fare, I suppose.
That's a question that's thrown me there because I wasn't quite prepared for that, but... let's have a look at what we had yesterday.
Just if there was anything off the top of your head, I mean, I suppose.
Kempton, the last race on Wednesday night, Entangling, showed a fantastic turn of foot to put a mile and a half handicap to bed very quickly and decisively, winning by three lengths from Cliff Faces. And Chris Wall's three-year-old gelding certainly looks as though he'd be winning again very soon. So I would take Entangling out of the last couple of days.
Okay. On to some more news stories then, Andrew. We better mention Windups. They've obviously been in the news once more, the BHA making the decision that they are going to be added to race cards now, and it's rather divided opinion. Do you have much of an opinion on it? Would it be something that you'd encompass into your portfolio of ideas when placing a bet?
Yeah, I'd certainly welcome it. It's another stat that I can study.
Well, if nothing else, it's another criteria for your search
engine.
Devise
a system around, yeah. That's right. So, it's always irritating as a punter when a horse is back from 33-1 into 8-1, wins easily, and then you find out afterwards that the horse has had a wind operation. So, declare it. You know, you declare cheek pieces you never used to, you declare headgear. One or two trainers seem to think that this won't actually help. And, a lot of wind operations don't work, but at least the information's out there and we know. And then, as punters, we can make an informed decision. Yes, we'll back this horse because it's had a wind operation, or no, we won't. We'll leave it alone. Mm. But, give us the information. If some punters don't want to use it, that's fair enough. They don't have to.
Yes.
I mean, we know what, the race card has the colour of the horse. That doesn't make any difference to my betting.
Yeah, sure.
But the information's there. And if some people want to use Luke Elder's grey number five system, then they can. But personally, I choose not to. So, again, put the information there on the race card. Give us the chance and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, that's a fair point. At worst, there can't be any harm that comes from it, I suppose, from a punting perspective. Obviously, the ROA have had their say. You've been involved in racehorse ownership as well. Can you see it from their point of view?
I suppose one thing they're concerned about is that there are certain degrees and severity of wind operations, sort of almost on a scale of 1 to 5, if you like, which is often quoted. So, it might be a very minor thing. It might be, major surgery that, they've spent sort of £5,000 on in some cases. But again, we can have, W1, W5, if you like, and they tick a box. When they enter the horse, they'll tick a box to say that the horse has had this procedure since its last run, and the information's out there.
Mm.
So I would say it's a minor inconvenience for trainers.
Yes.
I think breeders are perhaps more worried that... if you're trying to sell a horse that's had wind problems, now it's going to be very obvious because this horse might have had three wind operations over the past sort of 12 to 18 months. And that's there in the public domain, so it might affect the resale price of a horse.
I mean, we hear about the word transparency gets thrown about a lot. So I suppose from that angle, if people are going in to buy a horse, they might feel more reassured by the fact that that all well that more information is now available to them.
Yeah, I think the more information the better. I mean, we've had a horse today at Market Raisin, Methag, who was back from 25-1 into 16-1. You sort of trying to work out the the reason for the for the sort of the late market move, and it turns out there's a change of tactics and the horse is making the running. It didn't quite work, but the horse ran well. Now, in certain racing jurisdictions, if a change of tactics is going to take place, the trainer has to have to inform the stewards beforehand. We've still got a long way to go to catch up with the likes of Hong Kong.
Yes.
But it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. That's something that you see on American race cards as well. The general run style of the horse is listed on the race card as well. So that's another bit of information that they have over there, which I suppose will be beneficial here. But as you say, the massive amount in change of tactics, if you like, rather takes that opportunity away.
Yes. So, but yeah, I think declaring wind operations, will help us, and it will help us understand, why a horse has been bet when all recent form says this horse has got no chance of winning, and it will take away some of the head scratching, when a 33-1 shot wins that you thought had no entitlement to do so.
Okay, we'll leave it there then regarding wind operations and move on to some of Friday's action. It's a good weekend of racing, of course. We've got the Betfair Chase to come on Saturday from Haydock, a small but select field now after sizing John's defection. Bristol Demise, the even money favourite there. But we're going to look ahead to the action on Ascot's card, first of all, on Friday. And a couple of handicap chases picked out by Andrew to have a look at. The 240 is the first one that we'll go to. 2 mile and 5 furlongs for this one. It's a Class 2 heat with a field of 8 taking their chance. And a nice competitive look to this race as well, Andrew.
Yeah, this is a very interesting contest, the Waitrose Handicap Chase over around about 2 miles and 5 furlongs.
You a Waitrose regular, Andrew?
I wish I could afford to shop at Waitrose. I can only stand outside and stare in the window.
Hope.
Yeah, like a Tiny Tim at Christmas. And I don't drink coffee either, so I've got no incentive to go in there and nab a free one like some people do. But getting back to this race, there's a few sort of regular horses for me here. Morning Reggie is one of those for Oliver Sherwood, but this is a horse I've got labelled down as a spring horse. You look at his wins, March, and April. Tends to peak later on in the season. And the last time he won, it sort of came out of the blue, winning by 5 lengths at Sandown after going into the race with form figures of 5, 3, and 9. So keep that one in your trackers to bear in mind come March time, but I don't think he'll be winning first time out in November. Similar comments apply to Fortunate George for Emma Lavelle. He seems best in the spring, although Richard Johnson is on that one. And I've come down on the side of Harry Fry's Thomas Brown. Now, he also has the top weight in this race, Void Doe, but that one keeps the weights down nicely for Thomas Brown. And although beaten on his reappearance here at Ascot when only 6 of the 16 runners, he drops to an easier grade today, and I think the step back in trip is going to help. If you look at his wins, he's won 7 times under rules, but only one of those came over 3 miles, and that was in a small field novice chase at Doncaster, for which he started as a short price favourite. Only 3 finished. They didn't go particularly quickly. And, when he's been winning competitive handicaps, it's all been over trips of round about 2.5 miles. The latest coming on his reappearance last term at Aintree when he beat On Tour, who returned to win that race earlier on this month. So back in trip at a track where he's run well previously, I think Thomas Brown could be the value here.
Thomas Brown then for Harry Fry gets the nod in that 240 race at Ascot. We move on to the 315, another handicap chase coming up, this time over slightly further, 2 miles, 7.5 furlongs, the trip for a Class 3. And again, 8 go to post, so again, a nice each-way shape to the race. If that's the way you want to play it, Andrew, what'll it be for you?
Yeah, interesting race, this one. The first one to catch my eye was Brandon Hill for Tom George. This one was very progressive for Tom Lacey last season. Last season, winning 2 of his 4 starts, and had won his first 2 starts back in the 2014-2015 season as well. So it was 4 from 6 for his previous yard. He switched Tom's here, and Tom George had a winner with the Romford Pelly recently at Aintree, who was having his first run for the yard, and he also had a long absent runner score at Chepstow yesterday. So the brake shouldn't be a concern, nor should the right-handed track, given this one's worn at the likes of Exeter and Ludlow before. And it was a sort of pretty much a coin toss between him and Marsalak for Venetia Williams. But I'm just going to come down on the side of Marsalak, given that Venetia Williams is hit form with a vengeance in the last few days. Three winners from her last five runners, including a double on Wednesday in the shape of hurdlers Lady Karina and Mixchievous. I've talked previously on this podcast and on the radio about the Venetia Williams handicap chase system in November. This is often the time of the year to back the yards handicap chasers, particularly when the ground starts getting on the soft or heavy side. And they're calling it good to soft at Ascot, but hopefully there'll be more rain around. And Marsalak was a good second to Progressive Sort at Ludlow last time in the shape of Monbeg Charmer, who made all. That was over 3 miles on good ground. The last time he won was also at Ludlow. That was on soft ground back in March. And I think with more cut in the ground this time and with a couple of runs behind him this season and the yard now firing, Daryl Jacob can get a tune out of Marsalak.
Marsalak gets the call then in that 3:15 race at Ascot. Thank you for that, Andrew. Just remind us, please, of your two selections for those two handicap chases on Ascot's card on Friday.
Okay, the 2:40, I'm going for Thomas Brown, who should be suited by the step back in trip from 3 miles. And then in the 3:15, it's Marsalak for the informed Venetia Williams yard.
Thoughts of Andrew Mountain there ahead of Friday's racing, which you can hear live on Racing Radio from 12:10 PM with Stephen Powell, Ross Briley and Kevin O'Malley in the studio. Catterick, Ascot and Fosdass in the afternoon. Newcastle and Dundalk in the evening. Hope you can join us for all of that. Andrew, thank you very much. Pleasure as always.
Yeah, thanks,
Sam. Enjoy the action.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.